Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
You just heard is the opening for TV's Fantasy Island. So, welcome to LA Talk. This is, of course, the Writer's Block. I am your host, coming to you from my little hovel up here in Star, Idaho. And I'm Jim Christina, your host. And Bobby Jean Bell is on the phone from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And our guest tonight is coming to you from Minnesota. So we're kind of like an international group tonight. and of course, our engineer and sound man and good friend, Ronan Rosner, is down in Los Angeles. And he'll be the one taking the cues. So, Bobby, talk to me. This guest tonight is so fun.
Oh my gosh. We read quite a bit of books that are sort of other world, you know, fantasy kinds of books over the last 200 and something episodes, right. But it's been a little while, and I feel like I kind of needed to get that muscle, you know, for how to read fantasy. I'd sort of forgotten how to get into these other worlds.
There's got to be a how-to. And there should be a how-to book how to read science fiction. There really should.
Well, especially if you're not an audience member that reads it all the time. I think if you do, you know, you just have developed an understanding of how to travel through an other world. For me, it's still I'm kind of that early explorer, just stepping foot, you know, into that world. But this is a great book. I really enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to chatting with Tim. Yeah,
it is an interesting tome.
Yes.
So our guest tonight, as you have no doubt gathered, he writes books of science fiction, fantasy, and combinations of the two for fun, novelty, and probably for a few bits of coin in his purse. He is the son of two physicists from Pennsylvania, transplanted to Minnesota. His parents read him The Hobbit repeatedly at a young age. How can you listen to The Hobbit repeatedly? Well, we'll find out. The math adds up, and he loves both far-flung science fiction and epic fantasy of all kinds. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Tim Niederreiter.
Hello.
Conan, are you asleep?
We're waiting for the delay. There we go.
Oh, there it goes. Okay. Tim, glad to have you on the show with us.
Yay. Welcome, Tim.
Oh, glad to be here.
Well, this is a place where a lot of people are glad to be in. A lot of people wish they had never come. So there you have it.
We'll see how it works out then.
It'll work out just fine. Your book, I have to say, and I'm sure Bobby Jean is going to agree with me, because Bobby Jean doesn't always agree with me, but I think she does in this particular instance. Demon Scrolls, 400 and X amount of pages of science fiction fantasy, and it is science fiction fantasy sixfold. It is wild, it's crazy, and it's like, if you better pay attention to what you're doing, because you're looking at 408 pages of pure fantasy. And before I turn you over to Bobby Jean, who has probably got a list as long as her arm about questions she wants to ask you, my question to you, Tim, how did you come up with this? And I know you like fantasy, and I know you like science fiction, But this story, this had to be taken directly out of some black nightmares you've had.
Oh, well, I've had night terrors my entire life, so maybe that's true. I mean, honestly, it could be literal, because I've had terrible sleep my entire life. Ironically, this book was born over the summer from some really good sleep. It's a very new release. Uh-huh. So anyway, but, I also have been greatly inspired by things like Dungeons and Dragons and Warhammer 40,000, of all things, which is not fantasy. It's science fantasy. But these games, they often have a very dark edge to them, a very dark side, and a lot of bizarre stuff goes on. So definitely that's a lot of that is my inspiration for the monsters, especially. I do love my monsters, you know, demons and things.
Yeah. Well, that's air apparent when you get into the pages. Now, this is only book one. You're planning on more from the writer of Tim Niederbiter to Demon Hunter. It's going to be a series.
Oh, indeed. I'm actually releasing the next book on October 22nd and of this year.
Okay.
And it's.
And this one was released September this year.
September 3rd.
So did you write them together?
No, I'm still writing book two.
A deadline looming.
Yes, I have the pre-order set up for book two, and I should have it done this next week.
Because I think I saw it on Amazon. I mean, I saw a description of it, and I thought, wow, yeah, it's already got book two out there.
It's not out yet, but it is. Okay. It is up for pre-order, and that's got me kind of nervous.
Yeah.
I'm always nervous because my new process is much quicker than my old process.
Gotcha. So
it feels odd.
How many books in this series are you going to have?
I'm going to play it by ear, but I'm thinking at least five. For now,
wow.
And see where we go from there. Because people, epic fantasy readers love their epic fantasy, and
absolutely.
And I'm one of those people. I mean, I'm not a huge series reader, honestly. I have a hard time sticking with a series for a long time. That's why each of these books is going to be kind of, at least for the first few, are going to be kind of standalone, and then they're part of the larger story, but they stand alone as individual stories as well.
Okay. That's the mark of a good series too. I think that all series that are really good should be able to be read standalone, mm-hmm, and not have to follow in sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Actually, when I was let me think. I was a young teenager. I read this. I was given a book for my birthday. It was called Abhorson, or maybe it was my twin brother was given the book for his birthday. You know, we both read the books. We were either, each of us was given. Both were big readers back then. And this book was called Abhorson, and it was the third book in a series that neither of us had read the other two books for, mm-hmm, by Garth Nix. It's a great series.
Okay.
But we read the third book first, and it was amazing. And I got to say, standalone books rock. Books that you can read on their own are really fun for me.
Well, you know, Tim,
yeah,
I almost felt as I just started the book, page one, page two, page three, that even though I knew it was the first book, I almost felt like we were already into a series, because it helped me say their names. There's Sabin. Is it Sabin?
Sabin.
Sabin. I'm sorry. Sabin. And then the beautiful woman with him is Jezwa.
Jazway.
Okay.
You say that it's said kind of like pinyin because it's like an Asian inspired.
Okay. Anyway. Well, you may need to help me throughout, because of course when you're reading a book and you're not reading it aloud, you don't. It's okay that you don't know how to pronounce the names,
but I
don't
want
to.
Yeah.
I don't want to embarrass myself or you when we talk tonight. But I felt like, you know, you're going to spin their backstory as we go. Some authors spin it pretty soon to help us understand the characters. I kind of wondered if we were ever going to know what has caused them to leave another part of this world you've created and find themselves where they are. And then you do spin some of that, but I almost felt like if he wanted to do a prequel, he probably could, because I think their previous life could be very interesting, and the journeys. I almost felt a little bit like we were reading a Greek, we were reading, you know, a travel story, and hitting on different places where there were mythical or mystical characters that they were, you know, kind of running into. But you also write a lot of what I would say profound things. One was really early in the book. The myth of a man can weigh him down as sure as a massive frame and a heavy blade. And I don't know, that just slipped off that, you know, this is going to be the story of the journey of a man that has a reputation. He's running from it. He's trying to go someplace no one knows him. He's on a mission. I don't quite know what that mission is, but he's going to be really interesting to follow. And he is. And you litter this book with a lot of really, I would say, almost sort of profound lessons. I don't know if you meant to do that, or if it was me looking for them between the fantasy worlds or what.
Yeah, it was almost like life lessons scattered throughout, you know, salted into the storyline. It actually was quite interesting to read some of those, and then to find out kind of where your head is, Tim. And I think probably by the time you finish The Demon Hunter or The Demon Scroll, you pretty much know where you're coming from as far as a writer goes. Now, personally, I don't know, but as far as, you know, pegging you as a writer and where your mind is, it's pretty apparent when you get done with this book.
Oh, would you say so? Where's my head then? I can't seem to find it.
Well, most writers can't, but all of us put stuff into our books and all of us put stuff into our stories of ourselves somewhere.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I would say one of the key things that actually I realized when I was editing the book, not when I was writing it, but when I finished the entire first draft and I started editing it, I about halfway through, I realized this book is about people learning things. That's really the theme of the story. It's about people learning
exactly
to try, especially to try
is exactly
kind of the overall theme there. And that's been my struggle for a long time now. Struggling, trying to write more, trying to write faster, and so on.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure a lot of these life lessons that you put in there are yours.
Oh, I mean, how could they not be at this point?
Well, yes, but we can all make them up. But I mean, true. You know, it's I think it's more profound when they're yours and you put them into a story.
Yeah. How about this one? Curses walk the same roads as the overconfident.
Wow, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I had to think. I was like, wait, I gotta think about that. I thought, you know what, I guess that's sort of, yeah, it's like, you know, that's really true.
Well, and that does actually speak to just, that's a theme that through my entire life is confidence versus overconfidence, you know, and trouble of overconfidence.
Yeah, and we see that in these characters is they, you have them involved in a lot of conflict, and
yes.
And some are still kind of young and unproven, and they're confident. And that confidence is, they really rely on it. And then others who have been around for not necessarily centuries, but they begin at times, and this, you see this in the battles, partly they may lose because they begin to lose the confidence. So, that's a big part of the story. Yeah.
So this is a very long book, and as you call it, it's a full length tale. how long did it take you to write this?
Well, I dictated the first draft. So it took about 3 weeks to do that. And then another 3 weeks to edit the book.
Okay. So then 6 weeks. Wow. You got a book done in 6 weeks?
And dictated
just about,
it.
Yeah.
Dictated it. Now, what caused you to dictate it, Tim?
I'm so slow at typing, and I just recently started dictating. I just started dictating over the summer. I have the transcription app that you've been using, and I said to myself, let's try it, because I have had this setting, this universe, this world for a long time. My twin brother, who I mentioned before, he wanted me to write in this world for so long, and I said to myself, I want to do it, but I know the books have to be big because this is an epic fantasy, and I just type too slowly to get that done in a timely fashion. So I decided to give dictation one more try. And I guess it worked. I've been very nervous about the book. I probably shouldn't admit that, but I was nervous because the rough draft when I dictate is extremely rough. And so I had to put a lot of effort into fixing it. And I'm never quite, and I felt very unsure that I'd done a good enough job doing that.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay. So did you work off an outline?
No, I don't outline. I don't do an outline.
So you just started talking?
Let me be perfectly clear, because the first 25,000, the first 100 pages of the book, I did type. I had them already typed before the summer started. So I guess I did the last 100,000 words over the summer in those 6 weeks. And I edited the whole thing after that. But
So you had character names, you had sort of a format, first 100 pages, you got us kind of into the world.
Yeah, I had a lot
into
done
the
there.
World and,
but I didn't outline that either. Yeah.
How interesting. You write very strong women. There are a lot of very strong women in this book.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would absolutely agree.
I'm proud that I am able to do that now, because I was not able to do it. My first few books back when I was started writing, we're pretty awful in that regard. But luckily they're not published. So, you know, every book every author has their stinkers that they keep in the trunk or whatever.
This is a question we have asked many times on men writing women and women writing men. And we usually get an answer, especially when it comes to women. I can't write men. I just, you know, they're just they're a species that are totally foreign to me, you know, and men. And I think all men, and myself included, shy away from writing women's parts because we just don't know that much about it. You know, so the emotions and everything else that comes into a woman's character, we don't get, we don't have. So, Bobby, you know what I'm saying?
I do, but I wonder, Tim, especially since these women are so strong, from the governor, Mother Mercy character, to the woman who's teaching,
mages.
And we have strong women in that group. We have a couple of really strong women on sort of the bad guy side in that little group, Fault and a couple of women there. I mean, we have, but they're so strong. Are they almost like writing men, because they're so strong.
Well, if you're talking about how physically powerful they are, in a lot of cases, yes, and that actually makes it a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
In a few of my other books, I've written women who are more, you know, more on par with what you might expect as far as power. But yeah, I definitely like having a variety of characters, and that includes a variety of sexes in the book. You know, you got men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And I, especially when I have a cast this large, I would be pretty remiss to not have a lot of women in it. And and I would be bored too, honestly.
Well, yeah, probably.
Yeah. When you're creating this other world, you're not only creating a topography and, you know, landscape, but you're creating the characters, the creatures, and also what happens in different battles. Like a sword can go through one and they turn into mist, you know, or they turn into rain. It has to be, what's that like as a writer, to just allow your mind to, there's gravity here, but you can just write whatever you want.
Well, that's the thing people get wrong with fantasy, though. People who don't write fantasy say you can just write it. I mean, I know Scott Sigler, the horror author, a famous horror author, has said similar things, but because he writes hard science fiction and science horror. But I think it's strange to consider that it's not that odd to say that every story has rules. And every world has rules, no matter how fantastic those rules are. Yeah. I really like, I know the systems in the book aren't necessarily fully explained, but for example, the reason the ghosts or the revenants at the beginning of the book burst into water when they're destroyed is because they were water all along. They're just a ghost animating water.
Oh, there you go.
Got it.
But that doesn't have to be said necessarily, because it's not that important.
I need to stop you guys right there. We need to hear a little message from out west.
Hey
The Writer's Block is sponsored by Out West Shop, your online portal to great Western apparel. Log on to outwestshop.com to see the latest in men's and women's Western and country Western inspired apparel and accessories. Click on Out West Live for on-demand live Western music concerts, Western music and equestrian lifestyle radio show podcasts, as well as this one, The Writer's Block. Why not listen while you shop? Use coupon code RADIO to save on your purchases this month. OutWestShop.com delivers the West to you no matter where you hang your hat, door to door and around the world. Remember, it's always a great day out West.
And we are back. It is now 7:21 Pacific time. And if you're interested in talking to Mr. Tim Niederreiter, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Hey, Tim, when you started this book, do you plan an X amount of pages, or you just let it go as it goes?
I did have a plan for how many pages. I actually planned the book to be even longer than it ended up being. But I always write to the story, so that I ended up shaving off, you know, about a third of what would have been the whole book originally.
Wow.
Just as I went, I'm like, it's not going to be that long. And so I definitely allow myself to finesse and, you know, design as I go. Because obviously, mm-hmm. if you're not going to make a big outline to begin with, mm-hmm. you need to be able to do that. Because otherwise, you're not going to get to the end and have a recurring story.
Yeah. Jim, did you find that last, I was going to ask, did you find the last, I don't know, I'll say 100 pages or so, was almost like a movie and you were sitting on the edge of your seat and
yes.
trying to keep sort of everything straight. We're on the ships, we're on the shore, we're in the palace, and, you know, and I almost couldn't breathe. I was like, breathe, Bobby.
I know. It's like the entire story funneled down to that last 100 pages, and then it got you so busy.
Oh,
it was just like, it was like watching Apocalypse Now.
Yeah,
you know, like the helicopter raid on the village. And it kept you zoomed right in and go, whoa, what's going on?
Who's fighting who now? Wait a minute, where are we now? What's that reptile thing? What's
I thought he was dead. No, I guess he's not. You know,
some of the characters are not cartoonish, but they just don't die. They're like the road run, you know, like the coyote and road run. They just come back and they come back and they heal instantaneously and eventually they're done. But oh my goodness, I couldn't breathe.
I'm sorry, but not that sorry. You know,
no, don't be sorry.
It's really fantastic
the way you did it.
Oh, thank you. But I don't want my book to be a suffocation hazard. Let's be clear.
Well, no. You were dictating that. Wow.
It's actually kind of intimidating if I think about it now. Trying to keep all that in my head was rather difficult. But the other thing is, because I got much more intricate at the end, that's where I actually did do a little more planning. Because as I went, I'm like, I need to close out these loops. I need to remember this stuff. So I'd write little notes to myself on the note cards in the documents I was using. And that would kind of give me lights to see by mm-hmm. as I dove into this, you know, abyss, mm-hmm. this dark cavern.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you already know at some point who would survive? And we don't want to do any spoiler alerts, but... Did you sort of already know who needed to make it out because they're going to continue in the story, or were some casualties you really didn't know if they would be, but then, it's, you know, in this battle scene right here, we're going to take this one out.
There were definitely some scenes that surprised me, and mm-hmm. I wanted that because I'm a fan of stories that feel, especially battles that feel like they have a price, and also that feel natural. And so, you know, I knew I didn't want to make it a total massacre. I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to do we met all these people at the beginning of the book and only one's left at the end. Mm-hmm. That's not the kind of book I wanted to write. But I definitely knew there had to be costs to this action, because mm-hmm. violence without cost is kind of a disturbing thing in its own right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True.
It sends it
rolling
the
over
message.
Now a little bit. Rolling over now a little bit on your process side. As you're writing, do you find that sometimes bringing up the history of a character tends to get in the way of the story? And it makes you almost, like Bobby brought up, writing a prequel.
Mm.
And I, because that happened with me, and I'm just kind of curious as other writers do it as well, is you can only put so much backstory in a book about the character, the main characters. And then eventually you either got to do a prequel to introduce him and everything you ever wanted to know plus, or just let the audience keep guessing. What are your thoughts?
I absolutely do plan to do some prequels in this for this series if I manage to, you know, make this the books popular enough and enjoy them, get them to enough people. Okay. I would love to do prequels in this series, either about Deckard Hadrian or even further back, because yeah, I have Deckard. A lot of...
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not to mention Saban and Jazway, because they're also really fun. And I really enjoyed them. Though they were invented whole cloth for this book. Unlike Deckard Hadrian, who's kind of the original character that I had based the entire setting, like I developed it around his character.
Yeah, and he's an immortal.
Yeah.
I would love to know how he became an immortal.
Yeah, and he's like 300, maybe around 300. It doesn't really matter. But
340
he's,
was
yeah, so like so there's a lot of pre-life before this story that would be interesting. And I also, again, we don't want to do spoiler alert, but you drop something sort of near the end of the book about him and another female character in the story where I kind of went like, whoa, that was unexpected, you know, and you didn't really go into it. So they go, okay, well, that maybe you'll pick up in the future books, or he'll just leave that there. Or if he went back and told us a prequel, then maybe we'd learn. And Melissa, we don't really get a lot of backstory on Melissa. She's an interesting character, but we know there's a backstory there. And we know something happened when she was young and she kind of got thrown out of town. And it's like, okay, so what's her real whole family story, you know?
both her and Deckard are really important in book two.
Okay.
As well. So they're going to, you'll get some answers on both those questions. Specifically, though more Deckard, it's more of a general thing because of the character that old and that with that much history to him. It's his life is more of themes to me than it is specific events in some ways. So if that tells you anything, no spoilers, but gives you an idea of the kind of person he might be actually. Because I do prefer to reveal backstory slowly. And possibly too slowly, honestly. I've written a fair number of books that took, you know, one of my longest books ever that I broke into three novels was a different series, and it was science fiction. It was the Pillar Universe, and believe me, if you have trouble reading this book, the Pillar Universe might snow you. It's difficult stuff for a lot of people because it takes place in a different kind of, in a universe that's not shaped like ours, so there's no planets or stars in it. Anyway, I love that series, but it was all based around a story that basically took the main character's entire life. And the first three books that I've released are all, they include flashbacks and stuff, but they're not like a complete account of the events, but they give you a great idea of almost everything, even if they don't show it to you directly. And I love that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm trying to do that in the Demon Hunter series without adding in a lot of flashbacks or any flashbacks for the most part.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. How long when do you like to write? I was going to be the question. When do you, is your best time for you to write? We get morning, evening, middle of the night. When is yours?
Well, I'm a morning person and I have a hard time writing in the morning these days though. So I mostly write during the day, just, you know, or morning, between, you know, 7 and noon is most of the time when I actually am composing new words.
Okay.
It used to be I'd get up really early. I still get up pretty early. I get up at 5 in the morning. And I hop out of bed. I got my coffee. And then I just try to wake up as quickly as possible so I can get to the page or to the voice recorder is what I use now. And that kind of comes from the way I started writing, which was back in high school, I had to go to school at 6:30 in the morning School didn't start till about 7:45, but I wanted to go as early as I could for some reason. I can't even remember. But I got up, so I'd be up out of bed at 4 in the morning. And I live in Minnesota, and I would go down to the basement, and it's cold down there during the school year. It's for most of the school year, it's ice cold in the basement. This is not a finished basement we're talking about here. So I would go down there and I'd bang away on the keyboard for a couple hours before I had to leave. And that's how I got my first few novels written. And gosh, it sounds like hell now because it was so cold. I mean, it was so cold. Like, one of my math teachers wove me these fingerless gloves. Not wove. I forget how exactly she made them. Whatever. She made me fingerless gloves so I could type, but they keep my hands warm. It's like, because she felt sorry for me trying to type in this frigid basement every morning.
Wow.
Yeah. It's we all have our things. I'm going to break you right here again. We're going to hear a little word from All Dogs Rule. Ronan must be in the bathroom. Ronan.
Hey, J. Michael here for All Dogs Rule. You know, if you're planning a trip and there's no way you can take your little canine buddy, how about considering All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover? That is right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. If you want a place where you know your buddy will be safe and have lots of attention, being able to play with other dogs, goats, sheep, horses, and more humans, then All Dogs Rule is the place for you. Acres of play space, grass, orange trees, the gorgeous Sespe River, and all with no stress, and extras if you want, just ask. So when your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better. We all know it was the dog's. So check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you. That's alldogsrule.com, 805-524-1100.
And we are back live with Mr. Tim Niedermeyer and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell and myself. And we're talking to Tim about his new book, Demon Scroll, and pretty much how he likes to write and where he likes to write, and no more basements, huh, Tim?
No more basements. So now that's not quite true. I dictate in the basement sometimes as well because it's just there's no one else down there, so there's some advantage to it. If the house that I share a house, and if people are moving around in here, well, I go down to the basement because you know no one bothers me down there.
Right. Now, you, in addition to being a writer, you're also a podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Would you like to give us a little idea of what your podcast is about and how it came to be and how long you've been on the air?
Yeah, actually, I have two podcasts, but the one that's of interest to your audience here is Alive After Reading, which is a podcast where I talk to creators like, you know, Jim Christina and and other fabulous guests. Mostly we talk about process and fiction and we just have a good time. It's on mentalsellerpublications.com, which is my website. And it's also on Libsyn. That's all over the web. I mean, you can find it wherever. It's been on the air for about 2 years. And again, it's just a casual conversation with writers. At least that's what it's evolved into. It started out as more of an interview show though. And I didn't have the energy to do that. I can't really muster the on the ball energy every week the same way. not that kind of show, but it's definitely really fun. It runs about half an hour.
Yeah. What, Tim, from the interviews that you've done, what have you gleaned? Have you taken away any sort of aha things that actually help you in your creative process? Anything that has struck you as,
there's two things really. And one of them is mostly just that everybody has their own process and that also most people, and this is going to sound kind of weird, but most people, even most other writers, don't have the kind of, single-mindedness that maybe I have as a writer. but that's kind of the first point. And the second one, so maybe it's really three points, but the other point I have is that because everybody's process is different, you can't judge other creators by what you would do. And I don't know, that's just to me, that's more of a life lesson than it is lesson of, you know, that you write the sentence this way or whatever, but because most of the actual craft questions are answered only by practice. You can't mm-hmm. figure out how you want to do something until you've done it a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. And I have done a whole bunch of writing.
And dictating. Yeah.
Not as much of that, but I'm getting there, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, having been on your show a couple times, I enjoy the hell out of it. It's a fun half hour. And you, I have to say, Tim, you're an extremely gracious host.
Well, thank you. I mean, I hope so. And right back at you, sir.
Well,
you too, Bobby.
Well, we weren't looking for compliments, but thank you.
But thank you. Yeah.
So far, so good, right?
Yeah, so far, so good. I mean, you know, so far we haven't managed to bother anybody, and probably we haven't embarrassed anybody, at least that I know of. So Tim, we're on the road to. Go ahead.
When you're writing, are you thinking about your reader very much, or are you thinking that you would enjoy to read this? Like, you know,
Well, when I'm actually writing, I'm thinking about what the characters wants to do.
Uh-huh.
That's what I do when I'm writing. And I don't worry about the reader until I'm editing. That's for sure.
Uh-huh.
So kind of before I start writing, I say, what would I think would be fun? And by fun, I mean, usually mean terrible, as you've probably seen, for the characters to go through. And then, when I'm in the character's any given perspective, because this book, you know, switches point of view a lot. I mean, a fair amount anyway. It is a book that, you know, when the character wants something, I was always there. Like, okay, they need to go for that. They need to try to do something. And that, to me, that's kind of important, because then it makes the story more than just, you know, magic hitting magic. Kind
of thing. Mm-hmm. I think as a reader, and thinking of you as the storyteller in this book, as you, the author, I thought it was a really great combination of what I as a reader anticipate and also full of surprises.
Mm, okay.
You know, we know there's going to be a battle. I mean, we know this is good and evil, and you even have evil working on the good side. How demons get involved in people's lives. But I would go like, okay, we're coming up. Oh, okay, they're going to have this showdown like at high noon in the palace, you know, courtyard. And okay, so I can anticipate. Oh, that's a surprise. Oh, I didn't think, you know, oh, that was a surprise. And I thought that was really great storytelling.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like, you know, because blow by blow on its own isn't that interesting to read. But if you're being surprised all the time, that's actually not surprised in such a way that you thought, oh, I couldn't have called that. There's no way I was going to guess that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But if it's like, well, that kind of. I mean, better people than me, better writers than me have said, surprising but inevitable is the key to good writing, especially good action, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, I've learned over the years that if I don't put out the very best story that I possibly can, I'm letting my audience down. Mm-hmm. And that's I figured that that's one of the very first things in writing is to put out the very best story that you can. And your audience will come.
Mm.
But if you put out crap, that's what you're going to get back.
And no audience.
we have virtually never had a writer on this show that has put out crap. Bobby?
No, we've been very blessed. Every book has been a delight. You know, genres that I never would have, you know, picked off a shelf if it weren't for this show, I have found myself just enthralled with. And I guess that's part of the fun of being a reader, is also allowing yourself to read things that you wouldn't normally grab. That's one thing I'd say to our listeners, is grab something of a genre that you never would have gone for on your own, because you could be open for a whole new experience, and that you may want to, you know, grab another book from that kind of genre.
Yes, because, exactly. You know, exactly. And you're looking for the quality of the writer's mm-hmm. writer's abilities in your second and the third and the fourth book mm-hmm. that you pick up from that one particular author.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I also believe that when you are writing, as Tim had said, it should have surprises in there. And I, as I was doing, you read the book, The Return, Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was writing the second part of that book, there was this, I didn't know what I was going to do because the preacher was such a bad dude. I wanted to make such a deal. So I let him shapeshift into a raven. Mm-hmm. And the only way they could tell that he wasn't a normal raven is they had these big, huge yellow eyes. Mm-hmm. But he, according to the raven, he could not find the righteous. He can find everybody else. But if the righteous were there, they were invisible to him. And I thought, wow, well, that's a surprise. That mm-hmm. just came out of midair.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
And much like some of the surprises you had in this book, Tim, mm-hmm. is that they just all of a sudden you go, wow. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jim, do you want to ask him the question? I'm just noticing what time it is.
Yeah, it is. we're going to have one more commercial for Creative Edge.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And when they were founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. And that includes the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. So Creative Edge is your brand and your future. And I know I'm a client. Give them a shot. Creative Edge Publicity. Mickey Mickelson and Avery Olive Publicists.
Okay, Tim, this is the question. Gird Your Loins is coming at you, my friend. The name of this show is The Writer's Block for a reason. Have you ever had writer's block? If you have, how did you get out of it? And if not, explain why.
Oh, I have definitely. I guess I'm not sure if I believe in writer's block per se, but I have definitely experienced what most people would refer to as writer's block. And I especially get that feeling. I actually get it fairly frequently. And so it's become more of a system of how to deal with it, where, you know, I'm just frozen. I'm staring at this thing. And I'm like, I can't add more words. You know, that's how I always right. think about it. And the way I handle that is traditionally I've wanted to talk to other people about it. I talk to other people about my story. I work out the kinks. I talk to my brother a lot about this sort of thing. But lately, and the more I've written, the more this works, I talked it out with myself. And I realize, you know, that I really never wanted to write that scene in the first place. I thought that was a bad event. Like, let's not do that. Let's do something different. Do something different is my uh-huh. solution to writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why there's so many surprises in this book, honestly, because it is a long book. And if you are looking for, like, if I'm trying to write a scene and I say it needs to be this, this is the next scene, half the time that's enough that's practically enough to block me, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what I do then is I say, what if the scene was changed in this way? What if this wasn't true? Not a big spoiler, but for example, the beginning of actually the very first scene of the second book. It's the prologue of the second book, which isn't out yet, Shadow Prince. But I changed the relationship between two characters because it was a husband and a wife. And I'm like, well, you know, I mean, I knew the husband was going to be murdered. Sorry, spoiler alert. But anyway, I knew he wasn't going to survive for very long here. But I'm like, what if this wasn't a happy marriage? So originally the problem was going to be that he wasn't dead. But now the problem is more that, like, he was never a good guy in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, maybe that's the kind of twist I like to throw in to what I had originally assumed to make the story more interesting to myself. And that's kind of where I get back into the story and avoid writer's block.
Okay. That's a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have gotten so many great answers on that question. They have been funny. They've been serious. I've never had writer's block.
don't believe in it. I have a deadline. I have to get out a book every 6 months. You know? There's no such thing as writer's block. We've heard that from a few, especially if they have journalism background and they just don't, you know, deadline.
Exactly.
We do every 6 months. I wish. It's like two months or one for me now.
It's like we have a favorite story, and it was on April 19th of 2017. Our guest on the Writer's Block was John Sanford, and of course John Sanford is a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's a New York Times bestselling author. The guy was just so gracious with us on the phone. It was just unreal. And Bobby Jean asked him the question, have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how do you get out of it? He goes, well, if I get stuck, I just bring in a guy with a gun.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a great answer.
And he also has to produce a certain number of books a year. It was another one that his first thought was kind of like, I'm writing all the time. And then they went, well, he shared that. We love it.
Yeah. He says he's got to write X amount of books per year because of his publisher. So,
yeah.
Oh boy!
But he's not only is he prolific, but he's just the nicest man.
Wonderful. He was wonderful.
Well, okay, Tim, we're at the end of our time, so why don't you give our audience your website and where they can reach you, email, Facebook, whatever you want to give them.
Well, you can find my website is mentalcellarpublications.com, same as the podcast site. But you can go there. You can find all my other books. My books are they're all on Amazon. You can, except for the book, the prequel to this book, to the Demon Scroll, is only available on BookFunnel. So go look.
Okay.
There should be a link for the BookFunnel on my website. So yeah, there is.
There is.
So definitely check that out because that's a great story too. It's kind of the quintessential, as I think of it, Deckard Hadrian story. Yeah, and then you can also follow my Facebook page, which is Tim Niederreiter on Facebook.
Okay, excellent. Well, we appreciate you spending your time. This is, of course, it's getting dark in Minnesota and cold. And from the depths of Minnesota to Star, Idaho, to Albuquerque, New Mexico, we want to thank you again for spending your evening with us. And we always appreciate it when a writer takes the time out to do that. And it's always appreciated when he sends his work out so we can enjoy it as well as talking to the author himself. So we appreciate your time.
Well, it's been a ton of fun. This is amazing. And I'm going to go back and listen to your archives now. I just, it's hard for me to make time sometimes, but I'll do it.
Oh, I totally get that. But again, thank you so much. We've almost 5 years now, Bobby.
I can't believe it. Yeah, today is like show 224, 225, something like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God willing, I'll be there soon myself.
Yeah. Well, enjoyed reading all those books.
But then see, we'll be 2 more years down the road. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah. You'll always be ahead.
That's right. And we'll always be older than you. So, well, thanks again, Tim.
Thanks.
Okay. You can hang tough if you want and just hear what we got going next week, and we can all sign off together. And next week on the Writer's Block, we have a treat. We have ex-detective and screenwriter and director and just about everything under the sun is Bob Sousa. He was the partner of L.A. detective Tom Lang, and the book that they wrote together is called Malice in Wonderland, about the Wonderland murders in Laurel Canyon in 1982. And they made a movie about it, actually called Wonderland. If you haven't seen it, John Holmes was involved and everything else was going on in that book. Great story. If you haven't picked up the book, you have to, because it's such a great read. Again, that's Bob Sousa. And I believe Mr. Tom Lang will be calling in and giving him a hard time. And for me, that's about it for tonight. Bobby, what do you got going?
What do I have going? Let's see. I'm getting ready to record my next Out West Hour, which airs Saturdays Mountain Time from 4 to 5 on KUPR.org, or you can listen to all of those podcasts at Mixcloud.com. I'm continuing to kind of highlight country music as shown in the country music film by Ken Burns. This is my third one on country music. I mostly do Western music, and Out West Shop is just continuing to add more and more and more product to the website. We just put up about 125 Western hats of all kinds. So, you know, just business as usual and reading.
Oh, I know. It doesn't seem to stop, does it?
No.
Fortunately, next week I don't have to read a book because I already read it.
So, well, I will start reading it tonight. So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to like it. It's, I mean, it's true crime. It's really good. It's very, very, very well done for two LA cops. And, you know, Bob Sousa actually lives here in town, so not too far from me.
He's going to be with you.
He's going to be in my studio.
In your studio.
He's
going to be in the studio. That'll be so fun. Yeah. In my studio.
I actually have my little studio in here now. It's very cool. And I want to thank Sam Hassan and Ronan Rosner at LA Talk Radio for allowing us to do this remote and make the show keep going on. And we just absolutely love it. And we're so glad that they've acquiesced to allow us to do this. And I want to make sure that we give a shout out to them. So with that being said, for Bobby Jean Bell and myself, Jim Christina, and everybody who's involved in the writer's block, including our author tonight, Mr. Tim Niederreiter, we are out of here.